Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. On today's program, we continue our series called Journey to the Cross with Dr. Neufeld. We will examine what happened on the first Sunday of Passion Week, Palm Sunday. Now let's look at the four Gospels and focus on the journey of Christ. Now let's go back to the Bible with Dr. John Neufeld.
I want you to imagine a conductor standing in front of a large orchestra. His baton is raised in the air. He stands motionless. The crowd that has come suddenly quiets. All conversation ceases. The vast room just before so noisy now falls deathly quiet. And in that moment, the eyes of every musician in the orchestra is fixed on one man. Everyone waits. It's clear to all, the one with the baton is in control of every strain of music that will soon fill the room. Picture Jesus that way during Passion Week. In John 10, verse 18, he said of his earthly life, "No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again." It is possible to view the events of Passion Week as a horrible series of events gone wrong. Jesus entered into Jerusalem with such fanfare, and then the entire week went badly. But nothing could be further from the truth. As he awoke on the morning, we now call Palm Sunday, view him with a baton in his hand. He will direct everything that happens. He will orchestrate his enemy's reaction. He will direct the enthusiasm of the crowd. And he will so back his adversaries into a corner that they will have no choice but to put him to death at the Passover. From their perspective, things got horribly out of control. They wanted to put Jesus to death after the Passover when the crowds were long gone. But Jesus was directing even their plans. He had come to be the Passover lamb whose blood would be applied to all who believe. On Saturday, Jesus had been in the home of a man named Simon the leper, and a dinner was given for him. Mary had poured expensive perfume on his head and feet, and Jesus recognized this act of love as an act preparing him for his burial. And already one begins to see the contrast between what Christ's followers were expecting and what Christ was seeking to accomplish. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's now Sunday. Passover is now just a few days away. Passover was the biggest event on the Jewish calendar. Jews from all over the world came to Jerusalem. They would travel overland in caravans. Some crossed the Mediterranean in ships. Others were local Galilean pilgrims. Some were even curious Gentile tourists. The Jewish historian Josephus said that on Passover, the population of Jerusalem would swell to 3 to 4 times its normal size. It would have been hard to just find a place to stay. Every room in Jerusalem would be occupied and rented out. The surrounding towns would all be filled to overflowing. Many lived in booths or in tents all surrounding the city. During this time, Jerusalem would be transformed into one of the largest centers in the world. If Jesus was to die for the sins of the world, he would step onto center stage. He would die with the eyes of the nation fixed on him. The Romans, under the leadership of Pontius Pilate, moved all their troops from their headquarters in Caesarea to Jerusalem, an 80-kilometer move. Pilate himself would make his temporary headquarters in the Antonio Fortress, right in Jerusalem, a fortified barrack for his soldiers should they need a place to fight from. The chance of Jewish riots would always be strong at Passover, so the Romans maximized their power to be brutal should they need to be. The problem was simple. Passover was the celebration of liberation from foreign domination. And so the Roman military would be on high alert, and Jerusalem would become a virtual police state. Armed militia would be positioned every few yards. If there were a messianic uprising, the Romans would be ready. And at the temple, hundreds of thousands of unblemished lambs were being prepared for sacrifice. There was a drain pipe from the altar of the temple which would carry all that blood and drain it into the Kidron Valley which surrounds Jerusalem. Before that week was over, the entire valley around Jerusalem would run red with blood. And it is against this what seems to us an almost unrealistic or surrealistic scene that the conductor mounts the podium, takes the baton in his hand, and is about to play music the world has never heard before. It is Sunday. According to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus climbs up the backside or the east side of the Mount of Olives. He leaves Bethany and he comes to the next village, a village called Bethpage, at the very top of the Mount of Olives. From there, if you are to get to Jerusalem, you have to go down a steep embankment, down into the Kidron Valley, and then climb up the other side to get into Jerusalem. But Jesus has stopped at Bethpage. From there, he sends two of his disciples to go into the village. And as soon as you enter it, he says, you'll find a colt tied there. Go get it. If anyone asks you why you're taking it, just say, the master has need of it. And so they enter the village and find a colt just as Jesus has described it. Both Mark and Luke tell us that somebody did ask why they were taking it. And Luke even tells us that someone was the owner. But he responds the way Jesus told them to respond. The master has need of it, and immediately the owner knows. He knows it's for Jesus, and he knows the surging crowds are now lining the way from Bethpage down the Mount of Olives all the way to the entrance of the city gates. The anticipation is overwhelming. This time, it may not be next year in Jerusalem. Perhaps this is this year in Jerusalem. Furthermore, everyone knows. Everyone knows of the miracle worker. Everyone now knows he is the one who raised the dead and rotting body of Lazarus from the dead. And he is about to come this way. So the owner of the colt says, take it. And so they bring the donkey's colt, and it turns out the thing is so young, it won't even go without its mother being alongside. And Jesus sits on the little one. But why? Of course, he is conscious that as he enters into Jerusalem, he will fulfill Scripture. Zechariah 9 verse 9 says, say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey. But not just a donkey, but for Zechariah, it is specific, on a colt, the foal of a beast of burden. And so conscious that he is fulfilling prophecy, Jesus mounts the donkey and he begins to travel to Jerusalem. But before we describe the journey, let's step back a bit. Passover, if you don't know, is the Jewish celebration of the deliverance of the Jews from slavery in Egypt, somewhere around 1445 BC. God had told Pharaoh that he was to let Israel go. Pharaoh refused, and God had brought a series of plagues on Egypt that were destroying Egyptian agriculture and the Egyptian economy. Then on one night, the worst and most terrible plague happened. God announced that he was putting to death all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of the cattle to every firstborn person in the land. But as Israel prepared for that moment, they were to slaughter lambs and to put the blood of the slaughtered lamb on the door frames of their houses. That night, as the angel of death arrived to execute judgment on Egypt, he would see the blood and pass over the house, and it would be spared of judgment. And so Passover was the celebration of many things. God's mercy on those for whom a lamb was slain, God's deliverance from the hand of oppressors, God's promise for a future deliverance, all of that was combined in this one festival. In fact, Passover had become important for that very reason. Ever since the Babylonian captivity, for almost 600 years, Israel was enslaved by one nation after another. First it was Babylon, then it was Persia, then Greece, then Syria, and now the Romans. But whenever Passover happened, Israel would gather in Jerusalem and tell the story of how God destroyed Egypt and broke the power of the great Pharaoh. And they would wait for God, this time not to send Moses, but to send King David's son, the great Messiah, and he would deliver them. And every year when Passover was finished, the Messiah had not yet come. And the Jews would say to one another, next year in Jerusalem, next year, perhaps that will be the year that he comes. And the Sadducees had to walk a very fine line with the Roman overlords. On the one hand, they defended their right to celebrate Passover as a part of their religion. But on the other hand, they had to make sure that Rome understood that Passover was not really treason at all. This was very tricky, and it was a balancing act, and if it were to be upset, the Romans would simply come in and destroy the nation, and then would begin a new period of Jewish dispersion. It was tricky indeed. But for the last 3 years, remarkable things had been happening. Jesus of Nazareth has come upon the scene. Just like the prophets predicted, he had fed the multitude and healed the sick. The blind saw, the lame walked, the lepers were cleansed, and good news was preached to the poor. And now, just a short time ago, Jesus had done something Even more remarkable, he had raised Lazarus from the dead. That event was earth-shattering. It was nothing short of an action of the great God of Israel. What was greater, the parting of the Red Sea or the raising of the dead? Everyone knew the answer. Truly, God was among them, and there was an anticipation this year in Jerusalem, not next year, but this year. Jesus would come to Jerusalem, ascend the throne, deliver Israel from the 600-year humiliation of being in bondage. And now the word was out. He was coming. And as he came from Bethany to Bethpage, thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, or maybe over 100,000 pilgrims lined the way and were cheering him on.
What a fascinating introduction to the significance of Palm Sunday, specifically in terms of the context of Jewish history and Passover. We see that Jesus clearly is the one orchestrating history as he came to die on the cross as the spotless Passover lamb right onto the center stage where all could see him. But was this Messiah long anticipated, the one that Jews really wanted or understood? Dr. Neufeld will help us unpack this central question. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. The Bible contains many passages about the topic of wisdom. Here are a few examples. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Or how about Ecclesiastes chapter 7 verse 12 says, "For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it." Wisdom is a critically important issue for all believers to understand and apply it. Hopefully, you have had a chance to listen to Dr. Neufeld's recent series on the subject called Skillful Living, focusing on Proverbs, known as wisdom literature. We learned all about what it means to live a wise and godly life. This great series is available on CD for our valuable listeners. To receive it, call us at 9492-440070 or email at info@backtothebible.in.